The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Church Fellowship here in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. For those of you on Zoom, thanks to the magic of the internet and our wonderful tech team, we are also as close as your home. We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world with kindness. I'm Preston Lutweiler, and I want to personally welcome you this morning, wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey. Whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into this circle of compassion and caring. Memorials can be powerful reminders of events, people, or sacrifices that call us to carry forward the values and lessons of those who came before us. Our prelude this morning was Ashikan Farewell, composed by Jay Unger in 1982. It was used as the title theme for Ken Burns' 1990 PBS documentary series, The Civil War, and a lot of people think it's an old original Civil War song, but it isn't. It was played 25 times throughout that series, including during the reading of Sullivan Ballou's letter to his wife and during the final showing of the numbers of the casualties from the war, which were 620,000, more than in any other conflict in America and in American history. As a matter of fact, until the Vietnam War, the total of all others lost in all other wars was less than the number of people, the casualties in the Civil War. Tomorrow, Americans will celebrate Memorial Day on what will be the fourth Monday in May. The first official National Memorial Day, which was then called Decoration Day, was proclaimed by John Logan, Commander-in-Chief of the Grand Army of the Republic, to honor Union soldiers who had died in the American Civil War. It was held on May 30th, 1868, almost 5 years after Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, and it was to honor those who gave their lives, in Lincoln's words, in defense of a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. It was to honor those who gave their last full measure to ensure that government of the people, by the people, and for the people did not perish from this earth. So now we will light the chalice. Cindy Westphal will light the chalice while I read words from Charles Flagg titled Memorial Day Prayer. In honor of those we have known and loved in the past, in recognition of the gifts and sacrifices they have made on our behalf, and in our sincere hope that we may be worthy of their memory, we light our candles, we give our thanks, and we offer our prayers. Amen. At Thomas Paine UU Fellowship, we also light a peace lamp every Sunday. Please join us in the response on the screen as I light the peace lamp, or as Cindy lights the peace lamp. May peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Today, our gathering song will be Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Formed by Joan Baez. It was kind of an anthem during the Vietnam War for those people who weren't happy about us being in the war. And it became an international song translated in many different languages. So, where have all the flowers gone?
Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Young girls pick them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the young girls gone? Long time passing. Where have all the young girls gone? Long time ago. Where have all the young girls gone? Gone to young men, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the young men gone? Long time passing. Where have all the young men gone? Long time ago. Where have all the young men gone? Gone for soldiers, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the soldiers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the soldiers gone? A long, long time ago. Where have all the soldiers gone? Gone to graveyards, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the graveyards gone? Long time passing. Where have all the graveyards gone? Long time ago. Where have all the graveyards gone?
Gone to flowers, everyone.
When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
So that version was by the Kingston Trio. That's probably the first version that I heard as a kid. Our moment for all ages today, we don't have any kids in the sanctuary today, but we're going to have a minute and a half PBS documentary on the history and meaning of Memorial Day. And it's a very good summary. So we'll do that before we go on with the rest of the program.
The final Monday in May is Memorial Day. It is a day to honor soldiers who died in war while serving in the United States military. Before it had the name we know today, Memorial Day was first known as Decoration Day. After the Civil War, people decorated soldiers' graves with flowers and flags so that they would not be forgotten. Civil War General John Logan issued an order. Decorating the graves was so important, he declared Decoration Day should be celebrated every spring. The first official Decoration Day took place at Arlington National Cemetery on May 30, 1868. There, 5,000 people gathered to decorate the gravestones of 20,000 Union and Confederate Civil War soldiers. After World War II, Decoration Day became known as Memorial Day, and in 1971 became a federal holiday. Each Memorial Day at 3 p.m., citizens are asked to observe a national moment of remembrance, a time of silent reflection to pay tribute to those men and women who have died fighting for the freedoms that Americans enjoy. Today, many people still decorate graves of fallen soldiers. Some also have family gatherings and watch parades. Who do you honor on Memorial Day?
We will honor a few people on Memorial Day. The four chaplains, which I will talk about, and relatives of Joanne Walker and Cindy Westfall. Our first principle, promoting the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and our sixth principle, working toward the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, may make many UUs uncomfortable glorifying acts of nationalistic heroism on the battlefield. But we can readily honor personal sacrifices made in causes consistent with our principles. The fight for liberty and democracy against the early slaveholders of America was one such cause. Another was the fight against an axis of an imperialist nation that attacked our nation without provocation, and two fascist dictators bent on dominating the world. Through the lens of history, our involvement in World War II was a just and probably necessary war, and the sacrifices of those lost in the conflict are worthy of remembrance. Today's program will include three remembrances, and I'll present the first, the story of the Dorchester and the four chaplains. At the beginning of 1943, World War II had been going on for more than 4 years, starting arguably in March of 1938 when Germany took over Austria in the Anschluss. Then September of 1938, Germany was given a pass by Britain and France to annex the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia. It didn't take long for Hitler to take the rest of Czechoslovakia. When Germany invaded Poland in 1939, Britain and France finally declared war because they had a pact with Poland. Germany went on and invaded Russia and France, and together with Italy, invaded Yugoslavia, Greece, North Africa, and a half a dozen other countries. Japan joined the Axis and conducted a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, bringing the United States into the war. We had been supporting Britain by shipping supplies across the Atlantic for several years, and Germany had been waging submarine warfare to sink as many of the supply ships as possible. And by 1943, much of the world was embroiled in all-out war. The SS Dorchester was built in 1926 for a shipping line that transported passengers and cargo between Boston and Miami. It was designed for 314 passengers and a crew of 90. Remember that. After Pearl Harbor, the Dorchester was requisitioned by the U.S. Warshipping Administration and converted to a troop ship. On January 23, 1943, only 14 months after Pearl Harbor, Dorchester left New York City bound for Greenland with 902 people on board on a ship that was designed for 400 originally. Most were U.S. Army soldiers newly assigned to the Army base in Greenland. The Dorchester traveled with two merchant ships and three U.S. Coast Guard cutters. On February 7th, just before 1 o'clock in the morning, remember, the dead of night, the middle of winter, a torpedo from a German U-boat struck the Dorchester. Its boilers went out almost immediately. The ship lost power. There wasn't even enough steam to power the whistle that would have signaled abandoned ship. In the dark, panic broke out, especially among the hundreds caught below decks. Aboard were four U.S. Army chaplains, Lieutenants George Fox, a Methodist minister, Clark Poling, a Reformed minister, John Washington, a Catholic priest, and Alexander Good, a rabbi. Survivors from the Dorchester reported that the four chaplains helped organize the evacuation, and when there weren't enough life jackets for everyone, the four chaplains gave theirs to other soldiers. A witness reported seeing the four praying and singing hymns as they went down with the ship. Now, as I said, this was the middle of winter, the middle of the night. The air temperature and the sea temperature were slightly above freezing. Of the 902 people on board, only 230 were rescued. 672 perished. It was the deadliest sinking of an American ship in the European theater in the entire war. The four chaplains were each awarded the Purple Heart, posthumously, and the Distinguished Service Cross, but they were not eligible for a Medal of Honor, America's highest military award, because they did not serve in combat. In 1960, Congress created a special award, the Four Chaplains Medal, just for them, and it was a recognition that selfless acts of courage by non-combatants could be as deserving of honor as heroic acts of combat. On the 8th anniversary of the sinking of the Dorchester, an all-faith chapel of the four chaplains was established in Philadelphia. So there's a Philadelphia connection here. It was in the basement of the Grace Baptist Church, which was later taken over by Temple University and then relocated in 2001 to the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard, where it remains today. There are dozens of other chapels and memorials dedicated to the four chaplains across the United States. Some places in the United States hold special ceremonies or religious services on or near February 3rd in honor of the four chaplains. Well, we're bringing it into Memorial Day as part of the Memorial Day service. The Unitarian Church of Dorchester, here's the UU connection. The Dorchester is the namesake of the ship, of course, holds an ecumenical service every year, usually in February, in honor of the four chaplains. So UUs can feel comfortable honoring and celebrating the four chaplains. My father served in the Army in the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. His brother, my uncle, was a conscientious objector who refused to go to war and was sent to prison here in the US. So people took different courses. Different paths in World War II. Joanne Walker will remember her father-in-law, who also fought in the Battle of the Bulge.
At least I don't have to walk very far. My late father-in-law, Seymour Trucker, was a quiet and gentle man. While I knew that he had served and been injured in World War II, it wasn't until he passed that I found out more about his services. He never spoke about it, and if anyone asked a question about it, he would either walk away or change the subject. Cy, as I called him, was in the U.S. Army as an infantryman. When he died, I called the Veterans Administration to order a flag for my son, Cy's only grandchild. The two of them were unbelievably close, and when Cy died, my son, who was only 5, was devastated. In speaking with the VA representative, I asked how I could find out more about his service. The man said that he would check and call me back, and honestly, later that day, I received a return call, and I was told that most of the records for Cy's unit were destroyed in a fire and were irreplaceable. He had discovered that Cy fought at the Battle of the Bulge, and that was all I was able to discover until my mother-in-law died 3 years later. In cleaning out their house, I came upon a box of medals, all awarded to Cy for his service in the war. Cy received the Bronze Star, a Purple Heart, riflery medals, and a slew of others. I also discovered his discharge papers as well as a photo of him in uniform. I put them aside and took them home, and for my son's birthday a few years later, I put everything into a display case for Ethan to keep. He carries it everywhere he moves, and he's moved many times. After things settled down, I decided to do some research to see if I could discover more about Cy's service. He only had one living blood relative besides my husband and son, and I'd only met her once at his funeral. In fact, I hadn't known she existed until then. I called her, reminded her of who I was, and started asking her about Cy's service in the war. She didn't know much other than that he was injured in the Battle of the Bulge. She didn't recall how he was injured. I specifically asked about the Bronze Star. After all, you'd think his parents and sister would know why he was a hero. Nope, nothing. At times, I look back and wonder sometimes if she was lying, but I'm not sure. But how could no one know anything? So I asked several World War II vets that I knew why they thought Cy never spoke about the war. Each of them told me that many vets don't speak of it because they saw terrible things and were traumatized, but that back then you just held it inside. So I'm here today to honor Cy Trucker, a devout Jew who fought in Germany. Cy never spoke of it, but he was a true hero to his country, to me, and especially to his only grandson, Ethan.
Thank you, Joanne. Sometimes it is not a battle with a military enemy that takes a life, but a battle against a different foe during or after military service. Sometimes brought on by exposure to war, sometimes just by the vicissitudes of life. Cindy Westfall will talk about her brother, Billy Culp.
Good morning, I'm Cindy Westfall. Wanted to Joanne's point, all of the veterans I know actually do not talk about their time in the service. My husband, my other brother, my dad, the year before he died, started talking about his service in the Navy as a pilot. So it's a very interesting thing, because not only is war very difficult, but some of their trainings and some of the things they go through are difficult. My brother, Billy, was a Navy pilot, and so because of that, he had to go through prisoner of war training, which he said was horrific, and he didn't even go through the real thing, it was just the training. So, which we know one of our pilots years ago, John McCain, suffered as a prisoner of war, suffered greatly. So because of him and others like him, they did training. So in remembrance of our veterans, I digress, as I often do, my apologies. In remembrance of our veterans who have passed while in service to their country, I'd like to remember my brother, Lieutenant William Perry Culp, or Billy, as he was known to all who loved him. Of course, I had to have my own nickname for him. I called him Bilbo Baggins. And then that was shortened to just Baggins. He was also called Bib by his fellow pilots, because when he went through the whirly, you know, he would throw up. Some of the pilots did, some of them didn't, so they would call him Bib. Billy trained on and flew P-3 surveillance plane. He always wanted to fly. He always wanted to walk in the footsteps of my dad, who was a Navy pilot. And so he went to Tulane ROTC, and he graduated Tulane, and then he did his flight training at Pensacola and Corpus Christi. While at Pensacola, they found a lesion, or he found a lesion next to his nose, and the flight surgeon removed it, and she did not biopsy it. And so 6 months later, while he was at Corpus Christi doing his training, it came back, and they found out that it was melanoma. So it was a misdiagnosis from early on. So he wanted to fly, and after the surgery, they apparently said that they got all the cancer, so they continued his training, and he got his wings in 1989. And he was so proud to be a Navy pilot, again, to follow in my dad's footsteps. And he got stationed in Moffett Field, just south of San Francisco. And I happened to be living in Santa Barbara at the time, so I got to see him quite often on the weekends when he would come home during the Persian Gulf War, which I was opposed to. But I supported him in this, what he wanted to do. This is what he wanted to serve and protect. He came home from, he was out in Thailand for a routine mission to back up the pilots who were going to the Gulf War, because he was basically a rookie pilot. So he needed to spend time flying on his own before he went into warfare. So he backed up the more senior pilots in Thailand. When he got back from Thailand, they did a routine x-ray and they found that the melanoma had spread all over both lungs. Somebody said it looked like a shotgun blast, just little tumors all over both lungs. At that point, the Navy did not want to invest any more money in his training, and they retired him fully in 1991. So he didn't get to do what he loved to do. He didn't get to serve his country, because as much as it was about flying, it was about serving to him. He was an officer and a gentleman in every way. He would, when he walked into a room, he lit up the room. He was charismatic. He would tell a joke. He would look around and find the person that wasn't engaging and wasn't talking to anybody, and he would go to that person and he would have them laughing inside of a minute. When he was battling his cancer for 5 years at the National Cancer Institute, he continued to be an officer and a gentleman. He would go to the other patients on the ward and tell them jokes and get their spirits up. He volunteered at a children's cancer camp every summer that he was alive. And so I don't remember him for the way that he died, but for the way he lived. And I remember him for his service to our country, because that was so important to him. And this day, when there's people that can actually, you know, say things about people that have served, it causes a visceral response in me, because of what he did and how he served. So, you know, the thing of it was he wasn't a victim. He was never a victim. He never asked why me, and he could have. I went to a couple of appointments with him where the doctor was like, "Are you in a lawsuit?" And he was like, "No." She knows what happened. I think on some level they were friends, they were officers, and he goes, she knows what she did, and she has to pay that price on her own. I'm not suing anybody. And that's who he was. He was an officer and a gentleman. And the people that don't share, it's not, I don't know. I say to my husband, because he was also a Navy veteran, I said, why don't you share? Like, I've heard more of his stories from his mother than I've heard from him. And he said, because nobody really understands unless they've been through it, even if it's just the training. Nobody sees it. Nobody, you can talk about it, but it doesn't ring as true. So in remembrance of all of our people, because I will tell you, every enlisted and officer that I've known in my life and had the honor to be, even though I'm a conscientious objector, I took my three children to when we went to war in Iraq, to a, because I thought my son was going to want to serve, I took him to the Quaker meeting in Phoenixville, just to give him an alternative viewpoint, not necessarily to indoctrinate him, but just to give him an alternative viewpoint, because I just believe war is not always, it's not the answer. But I do really respect the people that have chosen and honor the people that have chosen to protect us. And in remembrance of my brother, who was courageous until the end, to me, the world's not as good with him not in it. I think it was a great loss, not only to our family, but to the world. But I learned from him to be a kinder person, a selfless person, and that's his legacy, because I sometimes think that I wasn't that before he passed, and he passed that baton on to me. So thank you.
Most remembrances on Memorial Day are related to war, a terrible scourge on the world that brings terrible suffering and loss to so many. One of our congregants, Roz Wealth, who passed away October 4th, 2022, would remind us of this at every opportunity. One of her favorite songs, which we played at her memorial service, was "Last Night I Had the Strangest Dream." And we'll play a version now, sung by Joan Baez.
Cindy Westfall, I'm a member of the CARE team and a member of TPUF. And this is Matters of the Heart. This is our embodied faith, the fact that each week we set aside a special time to be vulnerable. We know the importance of sharing, bring forward the highs and lows which come pouring out of our lives and our hearts. And we know the importance of hearing from other people's lives. If you feel so moved, I invite you to come forward and briefly share a joy or a sorrow. If you are online, you may virtually or physically raise your hand and also have an opportunity to share. Please start with your name.
Close Matters of the Heart with Spirit of Life. This version performed by our own Christine Perry.
Spirit of life, come. stirrings of compassion blow in the wind, rise in the sea, move in the hand, giving life the shape of justice. Roots hold me close.
So we're reminded from the sharings that there's triumphs in sadness from the doe who was nurturing her baby in the peace and quiet and solitude of the morning to our mama who had quite the breakthrough with her baby.
Cindy.
And so if we can just take a moment of silence, close our eyes, take a deep breath, feel some relaxation come in to our minds and our bodies and our spirits, and holding all of the people that have shared in the light. Thank you. Back to you, Preston.
So, unfortunately, there's a recent movement among some Christian nationalists to portray empathy as a sin. To proponents of this philosophy, those who act with selfless courage, especially in a cause for minorities or the poor or the disenfranchised, and especially if they give their lives for such a cause, are suckers and losers. Let us, as you use, never so devalue empathy, courage, and sacrifice in actions in support of our UU principles, especially by those who give the last full measure of their lives. We extinguish this chalice, but not the fire of love and compassion, which we will carry out into the world. As we extinguish the peace lamp, may we resolve to continue to work for peace among us and for all the people of the world suffering from war and conflict in too many places.